हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, yoga argues for the existence of God on the following grounds, right? Page 19. The Vedas speak of the existence of God as the Supreme Self, who is also the ultimate reality and final goal of the world. Therefore, God exists in the way the scriptures testify to his existence, right? So we're taking it that scriptures are correct, the Vedas correct. You know, so anybody who accepts the scriptures, right, means the Nyaya Vaisheshika, they were establishing just based on logic, right? The matter is dead, and so it can't be the cause of all the manifestations, right? And so that you require intelligence, right? Now, the individual, now jivas, the living entities, are conscious, but they're not the cause of it because they're controlled by it, and they're unable to understand how it's functioning. So that means there has to be an intelligence beyond the jiva that's doing it. So that's God. Right? So that's just logic. But here they're starting with, no, the Vedas speak of. So they say there's existence of God, the Supreme Self, who's also the ultimate reality, right? Final goal, everything. So they're saying, because scriptures said, therefore we can understand there must be God, right? Whatever has degree must have a maximum. There are degrees of knowledge and power. Therefore, there must be such a person who possesses perfect knowledge and perfect power. Such a supreme person is God. There cannot be any self who is equal to God in knowledge and power. For in that case, there would be conflict and clash of desires and purposes behind them, and constant chaos in the world. Right? This is also... Who gives that? Forget. But, in other words, if you have degrees of something, then you're also going to have a maximum, whatever it is. You can't get bigger, better than that, or stronger, or whatever it is. Whatever the quality, it's maximum. That has to be God. And it can't be that the jivas can attain that. Otherwise, you'd have so many of these maximums, right? And then it will have a problem, right? So we saw. It means Rome had so many maximuses, it had problem, right? So there's only one, right? Because the jivas can't. Means there must. That's another thing. Is that you have all these demigods, but they can't be the supreme, because otherwise each one of them has a different idea. So the universe, how it would be constructed, how it would function in their areas, wouldn't work with the other, right? How Vayu and air would deal would be different than how Agni would deal. Would be different from Indra. Would different. So it wouldn't work as a consistent unit. Right, so there has to be a supreme above them. So in the same way, there can't be jivas who attain that position. Otherwise, there would be differences. So their purposes are different. So there's conflict. So the world wouldn't function. So it's so smoothly working because there's just one authority. Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand how there must be a maximum. We have open scales, right? Like sound.
We say that, but. There has to means for anything there's a maximum that you can get, right?
In numbers,
yeah. But I'm saying still that maximum, it's unlimited. So, okay.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's always getting bigger. But I'm saying that's what. So the point is there must be a maximum. So it must be a limit. So it can't be jivas who are that limit.
No,
so we're pointing out is that so there must be a singular limit. So that is God.
Makes perfect sense.
Like that.
Do they function in agreement with Nyaya? Or they don't?
No, I mean, on that, people will agree to that. But the point is there's a difference between understanding that God exists and actually knowing God. So through logic, you can appreciate there must be God. But to actually understand and know God, that's only through devotion. So that's where the Nyaya system breaks down.
Because it's really Nyaya point.
No, it means of course, there's logic. So logic is a standard Vedic methodology. All the difference is that in Nyaya, they think by Nyaya alone, they can realize the Supreme, right? Without any other addition. While all the other schools, then it's not by Nyaya alone, right? Nyaya is just the system you use for understanding, you know, a logical system. Is that nice? But in any case, generally speaking, the principles of Nyaya, everybody accepts that. So everybody does logic according to the detail of Nyaya. You know, just like the detail of how the universe is broken down, that'll be done according to Shankhya. Though some use one that's less, some use ones that are more. But because it's like you can take the six enemies and count those. You know, some will do that. So I think Lord Chaitanya discusses it. Some, I think it's up to 33 or 36. Some will count that many elements. Because they'll add details of certain ones into it. Like the mind is there. Mind already includes those. But they'll count them out as separate. You know, just like when you say mind, it includes intelligence and false ego. You don't have to say it separately. Because there are other aspects of the mind. But because of their functioning, therefore they're given separate position. So the 24, then that's basically how God himself defines it. You know. But there are other ways to, like I think, was it Brahma Samhita, I think, mentions either 16 or 9. Like that. Because you just have the senses, you know, the 10 senses and the mind. And that is the creation. Right? Because from all this, the senses and all that, you have all the, you go back into all the tanmatras and all the elements. So you automatically have them. Because the sense is only functioning towards sense objects with the point of sense itself. So you automatically then those 10 become 20. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So you can just say 11, or you could say, or some take it even, I think Brahma Samhita takes it, there's earth, water, how do they do that? It's some the way that's clever, that it just folds everything up. I think mind just covers everything, and then everything else is just given, you know. It may just be earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and then the three modes and the mind. Mm. You know, and then from that, because everything else comes out of, you know, like that. It's something clever. So it's just a matter of where you're putting your emphasis, so how many details you need to work with it. So if your philosophy to explain major points, you need these fine ones, you'll use a bigger one. And if you don't, then you use a smaller one. So in the same way as in logic plays a greater or lesser part in all of them. So they'll all use logic, but just some of them use it more and some of them less. Because Nyaya and Vaisheshika, that's all they have. Right? And your atheistic Shankhya, that's all it has. But when you get your theistic, then there's a little bit. And three, the creation of the world is due to the association of Purusha and Prakriti, and its dissolution is due to their disassociation. Right, so that's similar to Shankhya. Right, we're in yoga, right?
Yeah.
We're in Shankhya. I was going to say that's like Shankhya. Okay, so that's there. So, but the dissolution, what it means here is dissolution for the individual jiva. Means the dissolution in the material world is when you disassociate yourself. Everybody else is still sitting around here, and they're quite happy. Here they're taking it as a bigger Purusha. Oh no, they're using small. Purusha and Prakriti, being two independent principles, cannot be naturally associated or disassociated. Therefore, there must be an intelligent cause which affects their association and disassociation according to the unseen moral deserts, adrishta, of individual selves. Moral desserts. So that means something that has too much cream or chocolate is immoral, yeah, right? So it can't be that kind of dessert. So a moral dessert means like a carrot or something.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out with an apple, right? Okay. So here's St. Purusha and Prakriti. So the jiva and the material energy, when they come together, there's the material phenomena. When they're apart, then there isn't a material manifestation. Right? But they aren't connected to each other. Right? They're two independent principles, because the jiva is conscious, Prakriti is unconscious. Right? Jiva is eternal. The Prakriti, its position is eternal, but its manifestation is temporary. So they're actually not associated. So there has to be a supreme power that affects that they're actually put together. Like that. Yes, go ahead. Just warning about the moral and immoral desserts. So adrishta is probably whatever, because adrishta is that element of the results of karma, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So that means according to their unseen moral results of their work. Mm-hmm.
Say
right?
God is just desserts.
Huh?
That's the saying. He got his just desserts.
Yes,
it's got what was coming to him.
Okay, yeah.
But it's not spelled with one S.
So they take it one step further than from Shankya, that's what they said.
Yeah, I mean, Shankya is taking this, well, because you see is that you have the element of the Vaishnav Shankya, which would actually technically be Vedanta. Shankya would just be a portion of it. Then you have where Shankya, you're just trying to use the analysis of the mechanics of the material world as your system of elevation. Right? So that, by doing it properly, you could possibly liberate yourself. You know, means on this temporary concept of liberation that people have so much adore, right? But if you want the full, then it has to be, it's only portion of the Vaishnava philosophy of Vedanta. Right? So here, then, they're taking that aspect, but they're adding the supreme into it. So it would be like the Vaishnava. So it would be there, but it's still just a continuation. Or you're instead of only intellectually, you're including the mind in this process, right? So that's why the meditation and all the things to get the mind easier. So basically, that'll be the difference between the Shankya and the Yoga. Yoga is that the Yoga includes the mind. Well, Shankya, Nyaya, and Vaisheshika don't. They don't seem to bother with it. They know it gets entangled, but their point is if you have knowledge, you won't get entangled. You know, but that might work for nerds, right?
But not even.
Not even, okay.
The ones who live 36,000 years.
Yeah, 36,000 year nerds, yeah. But that's what it takes to get realized, and then you do something, right? You know, so. But I mean, that's not bad. It means if you look at it, a third of your life. So if by the time you were 36 years old, you would become self-realized. It's not bad. You know, you can, you know, it's okay. But that means you had to start when you're born. Right? You know? Talk to me, I'm in meditation. But you're just bored. At least say hello. After 36,000 years. Yeah, so then you'd have to give yourself a few years, because technically you can't do the real rigorous asanas till you're 12. Like that. It means before that the body's not developed enough. So that means when you're 48. Okay, and then it's two more years than you know, vanaprastha. Yeah. So that's why they had to live for 100,000, because then after 36,000 years of meditation, then the husband and wife would go off and start a family. You know, just became self-realized first, right? You know, you got to have your priorities. Right?
Yeah.
So means you have to save your children from the cycle of birth and death. So until you've saved yourself, then you can save them. So that was how they would work it in Satya Yuga. Right?
Means they were both doing that?
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, together?
Or? Yeah, but some took longer. Bhagavatam talks about one of them took 60,000 years.
Kardama Muni, that's how he got his wife.
Yeah, so 60,000 years. Like that. And then started the family.
even, I think it was Kapila and Devahuti, even after they got married, then they performed more tapasya.
Okay, yeah. Bhagavatam meant somebody took 60,000, one of the Prajapatis. Oh, okay, it may have been them. So somebody else was 10. I think the Prachetas were 10.
Oh, yeah.
They did it underwater. Huh? Yeah, I guess you get extra, you know, speeds up the process.
So, Maharaj, when speaking about the Purusha, means the Jiva.
The first one is talking about Jiva. So they're saying is, therefore, since Purusha and Prakriti actually means they're coming together and coming apart, creates the how you say? The creation and the destruction of the world is their coming together and apart. But because they don't actually have anything in common, then there must be somebody else who's who through their potency, they're coming together and apart. Right? Because otherwise, after the individual jiva, how would this whole place be made? Because he gets himself out without actually understanding or being able to manage the whole thing. So it's not like when I leave, it'll keep going because I arranged it. So someone else has to be arranging it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are their three arguments why there has to be God. Right? So, okay, so the scriptures say there's a supreme and that he's a person. The second is that every quality has a maximum, everything has a maximum, so there can only be one person that has that maximum, so that one person is the jiva. I mean, is the God, because the jivas can't do it, because there's unlimited amounts of them, so you can't have unlimited, you know, maximums there. So there must be a supreme that's beyond that. And then the last is because the jivas come together and go apart with the material energy, but that can't be arranged by them because they don't have that common ground to interact. Right? So God has to be beyond that he is able to pull them together. So they're alluding that then he has some connection with both of them. Otherwise, why would he have power over them? But they don't seem to get too much into that, you know. The yogic view of mind, according to Patanjali, where was the 10? Oh, up there, okay. According to Patanjali, yoga is the control of the modifications of the subtle mental body. Right? He proposes that the mental body leads a person to bondage or to be liberated, and that most human problems are mental, and that the only remedy to solve them is mental discipline. Right. So it's your attachment to things, how you perceive things, right? Because the modifications of the mind, how it's what form it's in, you know, depending on the mood, what it's interested in, what these shapes that it's taken, that is due to, so that can, if they're done according to what's appropriate, you know, in the mode of goodness, according to Shastra, right? Then one can free yourself from the entanglement. But if there's not according to Shastra, you know, in impassioned ignorance, then that will bind. So this is then, so that if you regulate the mind, you can free yourself from these, right? Mm-hmm. But they're only leaving it at that. But then Arjuna mentioned, right, you know, in Dwapara Yuga, that's like practically impossible. Mm-hmm. And he was saying then, because that was the Satyug thing, because of the 36,000 years required. Right? So therefore, it's, even though it technically has a thing, but the point is it's a very difficult process, and you don't actually completely free yourself. So it's only by the grace of the Lord you can get freed, right? These other ones are just taking it that I could do it myself, but it's only by the grace of the Lord one can get freed. So then that leaves it that by adding in that Vaishnava element, this whole process is speeded up. Because if everything is connected to the Lord, then you're already liberated. Because bondage means you think it's not the Lord. Right? Mm-hmm. That's good. Among all human instruments that serves one in attaining one's goals, the mental body is the finest. The mental body is also the link between the consciousness and the gross physical body. Right, because you have the consciousness of the soul, you have the physical body. So it's the mental body that actually connects. So the mental body thinks something's a good idea, then it happens. If it doesn't think it's a good idea, it doesn't happen. So therefore, of all the ways to connect, it's the best. Right? Because it controls the senses, they're subtle. The ego is there, it's subtle, intelligence is subtle, but none of them are making decisions. Mm-hmm. Right? The mind is making the decision. So therefore, it's the finest of all of them. Also, if you look at it from false ego, it's of the mundane, of the external. Right? It means the second principle of weakness of heart. Then you have the physical, the sensual, and the mental. Right? When we say sensual, we mean the intellectual, and when we say physical, we mean the false ego. Right? So the false ego, the element of false ego, is connected with the body. Right? The intelligence is connected with the senses. That's your finer sense of ego. Then finer than that is the mind. Right? Because it controls those others. But then finer than that is the consciousness. Right? So they're not taking here the element of polluted consciousness. That's why then it will stay in a lower state. They'll never get beyond a certain level. Because until you address that causal body, you're not going to get beyond. So even sometimes they address it, but they will address it as your desires. They'll only take it in the secondary form. They won't take it in the primary form. Right? Or they'll try to turn it into, oh, but you're not all this, so you're just, you know, we're just all Brahman. And so that's, yes, but the point is even that's just stating that, you know, how you say, you know, you're human. But his point is but as a human, what are you supposed to do? You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. The mental body is also the link between consciousness and the gross physical body. For these reasons, Patanjali places great emphasis on the study of the mental body. His yoga system attempts to provide all possible means to control the mental body's modifications and unfold its great power for higher attainment. And so he'll give lots of detail on how the mind works. Right? But before this, they're just dealing with how the intelligence or the application of intelligence. So Nyaya Vaisheshika are more how to use the intelligence, right, to analyze. Then in Shankhya, then you see that there's the elements of how does intelligence function, right? So here now they've gone another step on how does the mind function. Okay, so footnote 11. In Bhagavad Gita 6.5, the Lord says, one must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul or his enemy as well. Right? If it's in other words, if it's agreeing with the process of upliftment, it's your friend. If it's not agreeing, it's your enemy. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the word Atma denotes body, mind, and soul, depending on different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. Right here we just say body, mind, soul, because that's all that needs to be defined here. In other words, body means body, the activities of the body, everything connected with the body. Right? Then you have the subtle body with the mind, which is deciding all this. And then you have the consciousness. Right? So in this, they've taken the mind in its position of the more subtle atma, or identity. Right? So they haven't done the one between the mind and the body, mean the intelligence and senses. Because when we say body, you think of the senses, so it's automatic there. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Or sometimes we say body, mind, and words, and we're counting that, and we're not counting the consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we're taking it that we're already conscious. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, Atma here refers here to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed herein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience. In material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. In this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. Right, so the mind, involved. Okay, so the mind's involved with the false ego. Then you have the body, and all your social status and everything like that is involved with the intelligence. You get into gyan, or intelligence means then connect with the senses. Right. So all these ways the mind can get distracted. But if the mind is just connected with the pure consciousness, then things work very nicely, yes.
So is it initially that the spiritual mind becomes involved with the false ego and then transforms into a material mind, or how
does he explain more of that later, or does that get explained? Because it means whichever way you look at it, whether it's the spiritual mind is covered, you know, which is basically the position. Mm. But even if you're taking this otherwise, the point is let's say you have, some variety of machine, like you have a wrench or something, so you can use it properly or improperly. So if you use it properly, you get that benefit. Use it improperly, you get the other. So it doesn't really matter whether you have the material, the spiritual mind is covered by the material mind, you know, because it's the material consciousness. So therefore, you identify with the element of mind, you know, like that. That's the nice thing about it. It doesn't matter which way; it still works out. You know, how you say? It's kind of like this was the old joke about. I think there were some surgeons were sitting around and discussing, you know, about, doing their surgeries, which surgeries they found to be the best, you know. So one of them was saying, I really like doing surgery, you know, on engineers, you know, because everything's color coded, you know, take it apart and everything's color coded and everything like that. They got labels on like this and that. And someone else was saying this and that. One guy was saying he loves lawyers because you take it apart, it doesn't matter how you put them together, it doesn't matter, you know, like that. It's still idiots, right? You know, so it works out.
So similarly with the mind.
Yes, with the mind. So if it gets involved, then the point is when it gets involved, it shouldn't be... that's why it's recommended, it's involved according to the scriptures and according to your prescribed duties. So that situates in goodness, and the mind functions best in goodness because that's where its origin is. But then still there won't be satisfaction because it's not just the mind you're trying to situate, you're trying to situate the soul. So therefore, the soul is only situated in transcendence. So the mind should be used for performing the activities in goodness to obtain... to transcendence, right? That will work, right? Does that make sense? That's what will function. So they're trying to do it through a mechanical, physical process. We do it by means you're understanding the philosophy and then practically applying it. So that's why there's similar, why the yoga system is then silly, because it's practical. Okay. Right. Yeah.
By their system, they are able to attain
paramatma. They obtain paramatma, but from there, because paramatma is basically something that's in between. You know, Brahman is Brahman, and Bhagavan is Bhagavan. But paramatma, if you think about it, it's Bhagavan who's localized, but you don't deal with him as Bhagavan. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, does that make sense? It's like there's the element of the personification, but at the same time, as you're only actually dealing with Brahman. So that's why I say it's localized. It's only a partial manifestation. It means Paramatma himself is Bhagavan. He's with all his associates in that. But we're saying the yogi is only seeing when we're dealing with Paramatma, we're only dealing with him as that localized aspect. We're not dealing with him as Bhagavan. One deals with him as Bhagavan, then that's the higher yoga system. So they're seeing Paramatma, but not with his associates or anything. So then they either take up the desire to serve him So then they'll take up bhakti yoga. So in other words, they start bhakti yoga from the, you know, the uttam liberated platform. Right? But it's but mechanically to get there is very difficult. So 36,000 years. Well, if you try to get, if you add in that realization from the when you first start Krishna consciousness, when you get that faith that the Lord's form is eternal, then it doesn't take 36,000 years. You can do it a lot quicker.
So we can say that their process is very materialistic and ours
is very natural. Because Vaishnavism is the normal activity of the jiva. That's the jiva dharma. It's the natural, eternal activity of the living entity. Right? But people aren't convinced of that. They're trying so many other things. Because people are in the material world to do other things. That's why it's hard to find living entities here that appreciate it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in a jail, how many people there appreciate that by following the laws of the land, that's the best thing to do, right? Most will feel the best thing to do is not get caught. You know, that's the problem there in jail is because they got caught, not because they were doing something wrong, right? The doing something wrong is not the problem for them. That's okay. The problem is getting caught. Does that make sense? So that's the difficult. But you might have one or two here and there that actually appreciate. And therefore, when they, you know, finish, then they, you know, go back into the society and blend in quite well. Right? Does that make sense? But so in the material world, most jivas aren't really interested because they've come here, you know, with a criminal mentality that I want to be God, I want to control, I want to enjoy. So that's why there's a problem. But there's the natural inherent nature of the jiva to worship the Lord. And there's also the thing is that no matter how much you try, it never quite works out how you want. Does that make sense?
I think it's further. Like, jivas may come here to enjoy, and then they finally decide, like, follow this yoga process.
This one?
Sati yoga.
Okay.
And then they are kind of righteous because they do want to get out.
But well, that is the process in that age.
Why would they choose this difficult one?
You feel you're doing something.
So it's still in another kind of way.
Yes, you could say. But the point is whenever they take it up, this is the time. So you'll find that there are two kinds. Those who want to merge into the Lord, and those who want to serve the Lord.
Even in this process?
Yeah, no, that's the point. When you meet the super soul, then you either take up, surrender to him and take up devotion, or you merge. You know what I'm saying? So Bhagavatam will talk about those who surrender and take up devotion. But Patanjali, he kind of leaves it open. He talks a lot about the Supreme Person establishing God and everything in the beginning. But in the final chapters, he doesn't really talk much about it. You know, so it's not like he's specifically the ultimate goal. That means he's the goal in meditation, but he's not actually necessarily your goal from the process. You know what I'm saying? So somewhat lower level, they'll want mystic cities. Higher level, higher than that, they'll want liberation. But higher than that, then they'll want devotion. So if they want devotion, then technically it's the same process, just it's more mechanical and takes a bit longer. So for us, is that because the understanding the Lord is there from the beginning, the process is very quick. So that's why it's called the direct method. These other processes are indirect. They're very, very slow. Like, really slow. Yeah, because this is that in Satya Yuga, then you are sitting down to do your meditation for 36,000 years, right? But what did you have to do to get yourself into Satya Yuga where you had the ability to do that? You know, you also possibly could have been a tribal, you know, or a dog, or, you know, you're Satya Yuga, but you're a dog, you know. So, you know, so there had to be a little bit more of investiture of time than the time for the Patanjali Yoga system. Does that Yes.
In Satya Yuga, why didn't people just chant Harinam?
Means they chant along with this, but
okay.
Means all of the ages you have to chant. Right, we see Prahlad Maharaj, she was chanting Om Namo Narayanaya. So then you have to chant. It means you come to the point of samadhi and then you're chanting and focusing. So that's there. Yajnas, you have to chant mantras. Deity worship, you have to chant mantras. So Harinam is just, you cut out the meditation, the yajna, and the deity worship, and just leave the chanting.
You're such a schmutz.
Yeah. So that's
what you're good for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the.
Just checking.
Yeah, no, that's it. So it's actually what makes all the other processes work.
Yeah.
But before they had the particular qualifications to do those things, and they're in that position because those qualifications are of value to them.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Meditation is of value. That's why they're born in that age. Or yajna is of value. That's why they're born in that age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, deity worship is a value. That's where you're born in that age. If nothing's a value, you're born in this age.
Yeah.
That's basically kind of the way it goes.
Yes.
But could you say that the Mahamantra has special potency by virtue of Lord Chaitanya's appearance in this age?
That's there, but there always is going to be the Lord's name.
Yeah.
It's just that whenever the Yuga Avatar comes, he gives the process by which you can attain perfection. But you can say as the Mahamantra, then is special because that's coming from Goloka. But you can also chant it on different levels, like that. Like someone was telling me that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was giving translations of the Mahamantra according to, I think, the different levels of rasa or of realms or something like that. And so then there is a meaning to it for Vaikuntha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's a known mantra. Like you go to Guru Vayur and they do, all they chant is Hare Krishna. They don't chant something else.
Mm-hmm.
So the kirtan party, when the elephant procession goes, it goes for 3 hours and that's every night. All they do is Maha Mantra.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Vedic, so it's Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the boys, you heard the voice chant the Sutta Suttara Upanishad. They chant it in the elephant procession.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. Because you hear it going along, they hear the Maha Mantra, but the other way. That's the.
Right.
It's talking about.
It?
That's just the way it's given, like that. So that's what Brahmins chant. So we're not Brahmins, so that's why we chant it the other way. You have to be a Brahmin to chant it the other way. But it's what do you call it? It works out the same. Like Rama or Mara. Right? Rama is Lord Ramachandra. Mara means death. So, yeah, what's his name? His name, not Madrari.
Valmiki,
yeah, but what was it before? Dasaratnakar. Wow, Dasaratnakar. Dasu means, you know, the fallen position. Ratna, you know, the gem of the fallen. Like, I guess like Karunakashipu, oh, best of the demons.
Mm-hmm.
He was best of the low class. Yeah, so he couldn't even chant Rama. So Narada Muni says, well, can you chant Mara, which means death? Oh, yeah, no problem. So very enthusiastic, started chanting Mara, Mara, Mara. Yeah, but after a while, it turns around. So.
Does that mean if we chant Rama, it'll also turn around to death?
No, it will control death. Okay.
Just a little question about the Mahamantra. Is it in every Kali Yuga, the Mahamantra is given?
Yes. But means Harinam means any of these. So you see so many groups, they all chant Harinam, but they're all just using different names of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They're like Hari Harai Nama Krishna Yadavaya Nama, like this. This is Harinam.
Yes.
Like that. But then within that, the Mahamantra is special.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these is just, it means, in other words, names of Vishnu, like that. That's what one should be chanting. But when Swayam Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, then you're getting the Maha Mantra coming from Goloka. Because that's its origin. It's the original mantra. Right? So, you know, Lord is there, His energy is there, the mantras expand. The first mantra is Maha Mantra. Right? The second mantra, I mean, expands from Maha Mantra, is your Kama Gayatri. Right? Then from that will come the Gopal Mantra. Like this, and until you get down to the Brahma Gayatri and then Om. Right? But when you come into the material world, it's a reflection. Om is the first thing that comes there. And then it goes the other way. So we know its origin, but then those who are the smartest, then they think it's later. It's a lower mantra. But we, you know, it's the other way around. Okay. Okay. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should, because the false ego means this, I am the controller and enjoyer. Right? So that's the false ego. Right? So it means you have the false ego, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that's its involvement. Then you have, I want to control in this way, I want to enjoy in this way. That's the specifics. Right. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. In this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. Right? Because we're talking the glitter of material nature, but the actual glitter is Krishna. So there is no glitter of material nature. So if you're attracted to Krishna, there is no attraction of the material energy. Mm-hmm. Like that. Who are falsely attributing the glitter to the material nature. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects, right? It's an object, it glitters, but the glitter is Krishna. So you can say, oh, then it's all right to enjoy it because it's Krishna. But the point is if it's enjoyed, then it's a sense object, means it's material energy. Right? But if it's used to serve Krishna, then that becomes devotional. That becomes spiritual energy. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. Right? So that's why renunciation is taken as a higher principle, because you're less attracted by the material energy. But it doesn't mean that all they've done is switch material enjoyment for the enjoyment of liberation. That's how they're able to get the mind to agree to it. But the principle of being less attracted to material energy then is a good principle, because in devotional service, the less you're attracted by material energy, the more you can be attracted by Krishna. Right? So that's why it's a valuable element. Right? So that's why it's given the respect that it has. Right? But it's the devotion that's actually the purpose of it. So if someone's renounced without devotion, that renunciation is respected. But still it doesn't have the position like devotional service. Does that make sense? So socially, you might have a Mayavadi sannyasi. You respect him as renounced and as a sannyasi, but you don't respect him on the spiritual platform. Right? So you don't discuss spiritual topics with him. You know, you ask him how his load is, and, you know, like that. Does he need something to eat? Or... The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasizing this point. That one must do this. It is also said, for man, mind is the cause of bondage, and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbs in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense object is the cause of liberation. Amrita Bindu Upanishad 2. So it says for man, because for animals, they're only absorbed in sense objects. There's no question of the option of being detached from them. Like that. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. Okay, we're right at the top. Okay, so therefore we'll agree with them on this point. Just the means, the details of the mechanics we won't get into. But the principles, the main principles are okay. It means there's what you should do, what's favorable devotional service, so it's not. There's proper situations, there's proper engagement of one's energy. There's withdrawal of the senses from the sense objects. There's focusing the mind on Krishna. Right? So these things are common. Just we won't use the mechanical process that they'll use. Theoretically, the yoga system is based on the same tenets as Shankya philosophy. And it also incorporates some of the teachings of Vedanta. So, in other words, it must have been based on the original Vaishnav Shankya, right? Which would be Vedanta. Right? In Shankya philosophy, the mental body is defined in terms of three functions or parts: mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right, so when we say, yeah, the mental body means these three. So that's what you're trying to control. And we'll use the term subtle body. Otherwise people get confused between mental body. But in the Vedas, they don't have a problem. It's whatever is the major element within a group, you can call the whole group by that.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. But in Vedanta philosophy, the mental body is divided into four parts: mind, intelligence, false ego, and chitta, or conditioned consciousness. Right? So that's what we're taking. So that chitta, that's the conditioned consciousness, the storehouse of memories. Right? So that's what's going to carry on the existence. So they might control the other aspects, but this one is going to be a problem. Right, so that means that if you get liberated, they may get rid of the mind, intelligence, false ego, but that chitta remains. So that's the storehouse of memories. So the storehouse of memories are not from Krishna consciousness, right? The Maya body has not been well practiced in Krishna consciousness, yes.
When I try to speak about polluted consciousness, that means this chitta?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember reading in Bhagavatam that memories are stored in the intelligence.
That's where the mechanics is are. Yeah. You know, that's why I mentioned before of this, then the intelligence is the closest to the mind. I mean, to the soul, like that. It means the soul is conscious, but his consciousness has been polluted by this. So that one they don't even consider. Like you said here, they don't even consider this chitta, really. Like none of the systems deal with it.
Right.
So it makes sense. So that's the difficulty, is they don't get into that. So then they remain with you always come back to the material world, because the chitta is only of the material. Now once you purify that chitta, then the storehouse of memories are about Krishna. Then you can go back to Godhead, because Krishna is what's important. So the consciousness becomes purified. Right? So that's.
So we can say that without purifying chitta, consciousness cannot be pure.
No, well, the chitta here means is specifically referring to the conditioned consciousness, because the pure consciousness is just the jiva. That's his natural state. So you don't have to separately. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's like you have shoes and then you have dirty shoes. You don't say, you know, clean shoes, dirty shoes. No, it's just shoes and dirty shoes. The shoes go here, the dirty shoes are outside. And if they don't catch it, then you say, these are clean, those are dirty.
And the saying that we can go back home to Godhead in one lifetime.
Yes.
The chitta would be dealt by Lord Chaitanya directly, because you still have memories, not from previous,
but what's important?
Not that.
Yes, just like now, many of the childhood things aren't so important. What you wanted and this and that aren't so important. Right? So in the same way as these other things aren't important, Subhadnath. Because it means it's polluted because you're seeing it not connected to the Lord. But if you see everything connected to the Lord, it's technically not polluted. You have memories of the world, but they're not polluted anymore. Does that make sense? So therefore the jiva may have remembrance of being here, but it's not in the polluted state. But there's so many other things, so why would you think about here? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you may be sitting around thinking of so many things, and then some big thing happens. You know, so you just forget about what you're thinking about, what's going on. So in Vrindavan, every day is a festival, so who's going to remember what happened here? Does that make sense? That's why jivas who've been here many times, they're the ones that are requested to come and preach, because they have some concept of how the place functions, right? But they'll be viewing it from the position of the pure consciousness. So therefore, then they can think how to, you know, save the living entities. So they'll many times, they're the ones that are requested to come and preach. Does that make sense? But you see that there are many who are not in that state, and they come and preach also. But then they're the leaders of the whole group. Right? So then, I'm sure they remember that some things from here also.
Maharaj is consciousness in the yoga system, consciousness as a place.
Consciousness, does it have a place? Do they talk about consciousness? They worry about it?
They don't acknowledge it as part of the mental body.
It's not part of the mental body. So they're only working with the mind. So they're only dealing with the mind that tells it false ego. So in other words, the subtle body is all that they're taking. But for us, then the mental body has four parts, right? You could say subtle body has three, but the mental body has four. So, but there, this what we call the subtle body, they'll call the mental body, because we're meaning those four kinds of egos. Generally, most only deal. I mean, all of them only deal with three. We're the only one that deals with four. So that's why we can actually, end material existence, because the idea that I'm the controller and the enjoyer is what gets you here in the first place. It means that you have that first one. That's what drops you out of the spiritual world into the material world, right? Then you develop the other three, right? So getting rid of those three isn't enough to get you in the spiritual world. It can get you liberated, but that's a temporary situation, because we didn't fall here from the Brahma Jyoti. You know, you fall from the Brahman state, but not from the Brahma Jyoti, right? So that's the things. You can be interactive on the Brahman state. The four Kumaras are interactive, right? It means they curse Jai and Vijay from the Brahman platform. You know what I'm saying? But they hadn't. But then coming in contact with Lord Vishnu, then they developed an attraction for the Lord. So the idea that they're thinking, I'll go to the Brahman Jyoti. In the liberated state. But that's unnatural for the jiva to be floating around in the Brahma Jyoti. Right? That he's situated on the Brahman platform, that's normal. But to be situated there without attention to Krishna, that's not normal. Right? It means the situation is spiritual, but his consciousness is devotional. Right? So love of God, from the spirit in the spiritual situation, that's the normal position, right? But as we said, is you're dealing with the same energy, the same personality. So if you're dealing serving Krishna, then Mahamaya will act in the office of Yogamaya. This is the same person, right? So then you're spiritually situated. So we'll say something is spiritualized.
In our Vaishnava philosophy, we said that consciousness is a manifestation of the soul.
It's means you could say it's a symptom of the soul. It's how you can tell that the soul is there because it's conscious.
And what is
the rock? It's not conscious.
Yes.
Right, but if you want to tell if it's alive, take a pin, a sharp pin, and poke it. If it moves, it's alive. If it doesn't move, it's not.
I thought in Navadvipa all the matter was conscious.
Oh, okay, that's another thing. So don't poke the rock. It's all conscious. It just plays like it's not. Hey, play dead. He's coming.
He's smoking.
Well, that's what happened to our rock.
Yeah,
right?
That's what. That was the time, yeah.
Maharaj, in this yoga approach, what is the symptom of the soul?
I guess the mind. That's all, folks. Finish that one. Okay. Okay, in Shankhya, the mental body is defined in terms of three functions or parts. Because in Shankhya, they're not worried about the soul after liberation. So they're feeling that the soul is only conscious because of contact with matter.
Mm.
Right? So these first three systems, that's basically how they look at it. That consciousness is not inherent in the soul. Right, maybe a symptom, but even though it's a symptom, it's not something they worry about because it's only there because you're conditioned. Once you're not conditioned, it goes away. Right? But in Vedanta, that is the nature of the soul to be conscious. So that's different. It's higher. It's including that. So it's not consciousness is coming from how you say. Yeah, consciousness is not coming from matter. But even we see in the Mayavad Vedanta that one is conscious of one's individuality because of matter. So they're attributing individual consciousness as coming from contact with matter. While otherwise you'd have the universal consciousness. But how does every individual have the universal consciousness? So there isn't any individuality, you know, so but it's just one. At the same time, it gets a little weird to kind of work out. It sounds great, but you know, it doesn't really work. That's the problem. It doesn't work. So none of them really worry about it much. That's why they never actually get free, because they don't worry about this element of consciousness. Right? Because we're conscious in the spiritual world in the pastimes, therefore we worry about consciousness. Because if you're conscious of Krishna, right, then that's what will get you into the spiritual world. So therefore consciousness is the most important of all of them. So for us, then that's therefore there's four kinds of ego. Right? In other words, mind is ego it's from the modes, it's from the goodness, intelligence is from passion, false ego is from ignorance. And then there's polluted consciousness, it's the fourth ego that's beyond the modes. So that's why they don't catch it. Because Prakriti is three modes. I free myself from the three modes. I'm freed from Prakriti. Yes, but it doesn't mean you're in the spiritual world. Right? So being anything less than in the spiritual world isn't natural for the jiva. Therefore, he'll come back here. Because the polluted consciousness means I want to enjoy God's his energies. So that's the fourth one. Because I think I'm the control and the joy. So that's actually a false ego. So they don't count it like that. They don't catch that. In yoga, however, the mental body is equated with the mind, and the intelligence and false ego are considered to be aspects of that mind. Right? So we'll also connect it like that. Prabhupada mentions that they're just various aspects of the mind. The problem is that they don't include this fourth one, which is the consciousness. Yes.
purified consciousness is free from.
So, in other words, then the mind is an aspect of consciousness, right?
Mm.
And then, if mind, then you have intelligence and false ego. So then, the answer is that if you're conscious, then you automatically have a spiritual form of the mind, intelligence, and ego, right? But if it's covered, then you're not functioning with spiritual, with the spiritual mind, you know, or the intelligence. But you can use them. Just like you hear the philosophy, no, that's right, then you're analyzing, you're dealing directly with the spiritual intelligence. So you can function on that. It's just a matter of whether the mind agrees. Right? The mind agrees, you do, and it works nice. If it doesn't, then one doesn't. Okay, go ahead, Sam. Right? You got 30 seconds.
Purified consciousness is free from ignorance, passion, and goodness.
Yes.
But then they don't. But then the polluted consciousness, that false ego, that element, that's actually an element. False ego is actually an element.
Yeah, there's an element of false ego.
It's not a guna.
No. There's an element of that, but the point of the subtle body being made of that is false ego in ignorance. Then there's false ego in passion and false ego in goodness. So then you get the mind intelligence and the false ego. Because there's the element of false ego. You may be working that, but I identify, yes, I'm from here and I'm of this status and I'm of this age and I'm that's a manifestation, a part of that. Just like what you see up here is a part of the elements of earth. Right? But the original the original source is primordial to that. Does that make sense? Right? So the spiritual world means you're working with Satchitananda. Does that make sense? That's the normal form. Right? So that's Sambandhavide and Proj, that's the natural form. But you don't have to separate them there. Just like here, someone just materially absorbed doesn't separate the modes. He just acts. So in the spiritual world, they don't separate that, oh, this is Sandini, this is Sambit, and this is Ladi. They don't. They just act. It means the analyzation of it's only for here, because you want to free yourself from it. But you don't want to free yourself from it there, so there's no need. So being in Maya there is fine, because that's yoga Maya. Right? It's so good, even God gets involved, right? You know? But Mahamaya, then, is not so useful, and God doesn't get involved either.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gauri. Oh, that's one thing we should mention. I guess I'll have to mention for next class. Is that when we're, because we're getting closer to, for those who have finished the degrees and everything, with actually working out that at some point we'll probably sometime in January or February give out the degrees. And so then, but it should be understood is that when we're talking about these degrees and that, because it's connected with the academy, it's not just an academic element. It means at this point, basically all there is the academic element. But the point of the academy is to develop the lifestyle that goes along with the degree, right? It means that consciousness that goes along with it. Because it's meant as a tool for the practice of Krishna consciousness. Right? So we don't have the campus, we don't have all the facilities that the adults could do all the activities that the kids are doing. Right? But, you know, so all that's there now is just the academic aspect. Right? But it still should be understood as that the development of the personal development, the character development, the practices of Krishna consciousness, seeing through this kind of, in other words, you get this knowledge, it's not just I have this, it's supposed to be, you're supposed to see things in this way. That's why this course is called Shastra Chakshus, because then the other courses are based on seeing with this proper vision. Does that make sense? This goes kind of challenge. How do you go?